Hey everyone, what's going on? Welcome to a brand new edition of the Sam Bissell Podcast on the Ambiguous Podcast Solutions. And right now I'll be bringing you the latest and greatest going on around the world of Hollywood. Hope everyone is having a wonderful start to the week so far. A lot of stuff that I want to talk about on the podcast today. I'm going to be getting into some major reshuffling in the Disney film slate that is going to be going on well into the next decade. So strap in, buckle up. We're going to be really kind of diving deep into what it all means, why these release changes are happening. And this isn't just to Disney, or rather just Marvel or Star Wars within the Disney Corporation. This is with every single one of the companies that is associated with Disney. So we're going to get into all those and what it means moving forward for the film slate, why it's happening. And also I'm going to be getting into a Pixar film that is set to be coming out next year as they release their first teaser trailer for what is going to be the 28th installment in the Pixar animated film slate. But the first thing that I do want to talk about on the podcast today that I usually like to do at the start of the week whenever I start a podcast and do, whether it's on Monday or Tuesday, is of course recapping the box office from the previous weekend. And this weekend it was kind of really, I would say, probably the first big box office battle post-pandemic, really, when we talk about big blockbuster films going at one another, not really knowing which one is going to come out at number one and which one is going to come out at number two. And it was an interesting battle to see which one would come out on top. And then, of course, it was between Transformers Rise of the Beast, which was the new film coming out this past weekend, and what would have been in its second weekend, which was the box office champion on June 2nd, which, of course, was Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, which had a juggernaut opening weekend in the box office, quadrupling the opening weekend from Into the Spider-Verse back in 2018. It was a big question of how the film would do its second weekend, and kind of bring a big question about for what it means for blockbusters really right now, as we're getting kind of multiple ones coming out each and every weekend. This upcoming one, we have The Flash, and 2 weeks from now, we have Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. So it's a very big question of what happens when you lose a bunch of the premium level format screens, and if you do lose them, is that going to really affect how the box office legs for that film are going to be perceived? So this, I think, was a very big and interesting weekend, and a telling one, rather, of how these films are going to fare. I think overall, whether whichever one came out on top, really, one or two, both of them, I think, did very, very well for themselves. One for opening weekend and the other one in its second weekend. And so we'll start at the top for the one that opened big, or rather opened number one, rather, and did pretty well for itself. And that is the latest in the Transformers franchise, the seventh film in the main overall canon of these films that first started out back in 2007 with the first film directed by Michael Bay. And Rise of the Beast did come out on top, beating Across the Spider-Verse to take the number one spot in this box office weekend, as it came out on top with $61 million in its domestic opening and opening weekend overall. It came also in at $19 million internationally for a worldwide opening weekend at $80 million. So what's also interesting is that the initial, or the estimated numbers that came in on Sunday, since this is Tuesday, the actual numbers have also come in, which kind of are the actual numbers that came when you count to the actuals that came in on Sunday. As usually, you get the Friday numbers, the Saturday numbers, and then Sundays, it's usually an estimate. And then usually when you get into the Monday actual numbers that come in from the weekend, it usually is just kind of estimated between a couple thousand. This weekend, rather, it was actually overperformed by around $1 million, as the opening weekend coming off of Sunday, the estimates had Transformers Rise of the Beast coming at around $60 million. On Monday, when the actuals came out, the film actually did $1 million better, coming in at $61 million overall. So Transformers Rise of the Beast, although it isn't the big opening weekends that the Michael Bay films had back in 2009, 2011, and 2014, this is definitely a lot better for Transformers than the previous two installments. When you look at the last main film that came out overall in Transformers The Last Night, which was the fifth film directed by Michael Bay, and then when you look at the Bumblebee film that came out in 2018, Transformers Rise of the Beast is significantly better than those films. Bumblebee, which is kind of the lowest box office opening of any of these films right now, came in at $21.6 million back in December of 2018, when it was kind of playing third fiddle, really, to two other major releases that were coming out around the holiday time of that year, between Aquaman, which in the end grossed over $1 billion, and then Mary Poppins Returns, which didn't do as well as I think a lot of people expected that film to do, but had a modest intake at the box office during that holiday run. So Bumblebee was really just kind of lost in the shuffle. It was definitely the best reviewed film of all of, I think, the Transformers films that have come out in the last decade or so. So I think for Bumblebee, it had the critical reception there. It just wasn't able to get the money needed to kind of back it up. And even though that film didn't do all that well, Paramount and the studios and the production company still went forth with this seventh overall installment in the franchise. And it did better than that film. And it also did significantly better than Transformers The Last Night overall. So I think this is a very good sign for where the franchise needs to be right now. I think it is taking a little bit of a hit. Now, whether that's because people might be fatigued by Transformers, because the Michael Bay films maybe still hold a little bit of a sore, sour taste in their mouth, or whether it's the fact that maybe people just aren't invested into this franchise anymore. Maybe it's because Michael Bay isn't a part of it. They're just not connected. There could be a plethora of things, but I do think this is a solid debut for this film. It's just a matter of, again, the importance of how is this going to do. Again, now that a film like The Flash is opening up this weekend, like Across the Spider-Verse last weekend, where it had all the premium level theaters, IMAX, Dolby, Transformers is about to lose that this weekend, and all that is going to be going to The Flash. So what's the second weekend going to look like? What's the third weekend going to look like for this film? And that's really kind of the big story, again, like I was saying at the top, for this summer movie season overall. How are these films going to perform when they're kind of all squished together? And I think what's really going to be working for Transformers Rise of the Beast is the word of mouth. And the fact that this film got an A-minus cinema score, it's going to be very peculiar to see if the positive reception from audience members is going to get people to go to the theaters to see this film, and maybe that could begin to attract some goodwill for this film. It's also going to be very interesting to see for this movie, and this was a big part of, I think, the previous success of these films, wasn't just the domestic front, but also the international front. Internationally, especially in a market like China, Transformers did huge numbers back in the day in those early Michael Bay films. And looking at the China numbers for Transformers Rise of the Beast, although it did around $40 million in China, it was still just behind even 32% of what Bumblebee did, which did $58 million its opening weekend, and well below the opening weekend in China for Transformers The Last Night. So for what was a significant increase domestically for Rise of the Beast over Bumblebee and The Last Night, it was an underperformance for what happened specifically within the China market. So I think it's going to be very interesting to see how this film performs in that area, also in other areas around the world as well. And right now, China isn't as reliant as it used to be. They're very much, I think, focused on their own markets right now. They allow international, or what they call international, we call domestic releases, go into their country. They aren't doing the gangbuster numbers that they were pre-pandemic. So I don't think Hollywood is necessarily relying on those numbers as much. If they're big, they're big, but they're not, I think, a main factor in how they see the performance overall of a film throughout the worldwide market share, basically. So I think those are two of the factors to look at, is to see what the legs are going to look like here domestically over these next couple weeks, and then looking at the international markets, how it does going into these next couple weeks. So those are the key things to keep an eye out for when we talk about Transformers Rise of the Beast. When we talk about the second film that came in this weekend at the box office, which was the king at number one last weekend, was Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. That did very well for itself, holding at around a 54% drop-off from its opening weekend to its sophomore weekend, when it came in at $55.5 million at the box office. It now has $225.5 million domestically, $87 million internationally, for a worldwide total of $313 million at the box office. And again, like I was saying about what we're going to be trying to see from Transformers next weekend, what we've been trying to see from a lot of these films throughout the summer movie season, it's going to be very interesting to see how that continues with Spider-Verse, and that was a big question going into this weekend, is losing those screens but still having the word of mouth for Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, how would it do going into these next couple weekends? And I think the word of mouth, the reception for this film is really kind of holding it up right now. And just in its second weekend, it is doing exceptional business and better business than its original film did back in 2018, as this film has already surpassed the original's domestic total overall back in 2018 when the film Into the Spider-Verse did $190 million. This film is already at that mark at $190.2 million at the box office. So it's little margins at this point in time, but the fact it's already hit that, then it's still got a long ways to go in its legs and its momentum and its ride throughout its box office journey, just signals that this is going to be a much bigger hit for Sony and Sony Picture Animation and Marvel in general when you look at kind of the prospects of what this could mean for a Beyond the Spider-Verse next year and moving forward with the character of Miles Morales and the Spider-Verse, really. And so I just think that it just showcases the goodwill that the first film built upon, whether it was in theaters or on a streaming service night like Netflix, and it built out its fan base over time. And you knew just from the numbers the trailers were doing, the fact that Across the Spider-Verse was really the number one most anticipated film on the survey that Fandango did with about, I think, 1,000 plus members of their press, really, and of their membership. Across the Spider-Verse beat out Mission Impossible, Little Mermaid. It beat out a plethora of these movies that you would think maybe it's in the top five, but number one, it showcased the buzz and the wave that was coming for this film, and it's delivering so far. And I think the big question is going to be, how far can this film go? This weekend, you have another big animated film in Disney and Pixar coming out with Elemental, and then in August you have Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So there's a little bit of a gap between some of these bigger animated films coming out that Spider-Verse could really just hold on to being that big summer animated film of this season, and very well could be, depending on how some of these other films shake out in the next couple of weeks, could be one of, if not the biggest film of the summer movie season, really. And it's looking like it could head that way. And it's doing exactly what a sequel should do financially, which is perform 10 times better than the original film did. And it's building and, I think, growing a fan base that was already there and expanding upon it. And I just think there's a lot of goodwill for this film right now. It's doing really, really well throughout its global run as well. It still has around a few more to hit before it gets to $384 million. Right now, it's at around $375.4 million. And it still has a little bit more to go before beating its predecessor in the worldwide margin, but still, it's probably going to do it within the next weekend or two at most. So this is just the beginning of the ride for Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. And again, I think it just showcases that even though it had $120 million opening, it dropped down around 50% to around $50 million or so. I think, again, it just showcases what this film has been able to do, as when you look at, even though it's in a different universe than what the MCU films are doing right now, and it doesn't follow what that canon is doing, just when you look at the comic book genre in general with those superhero films right now, those movies, after their opening weekend, are dropping 60-70%. So the fact that this held around the 50% mark, which is very, very good, signals that this film does have legs and the buzz is very much there for audience members, whether it's people going back to go see this movie or whether you're gaining new audience members that maybe didn't know if they wanted to go see it initially, but because of the goodwill they're hearing from friends of theirs, family members, they want to go see it as well. So I think this bodes well for a very, very fun journey for Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse throughout the rest of this summer movie season. Now jumping on down to the number three spot is the Memorial Day weekend hit of the summer this year, of course, which is Disney's live-action retelling of The Little Mermaid, which grossed $23.1 million in its third weekend, and now has $229 million domestically, $185 million internationally, for a worldwide total of $414 million. Now, this one is still, I think, a very interesting story in the early parts of the summer movie season. And initially, this was, to me, one of the films that I thought was going to hit over $1 billion. And I don't think it's going to get there, unfortunately. I think it'll be lucky if it gets to $500 million. And the reason I say that is because domestically, it seems like this film is a legitimately huge hit. It's been hitting word of mouth. It's been hitting really, really nice holds. It only had a 44% drop off between its second and third weekend, which is very good. So it's holding really well here. The problem that other live action retellings like Aladdin, Beauty and the Beast, and Lion King didn't have that this film has is that for those films to achieve $1 billion at the box office, they needed the international markets. And this film just, for some reason, just does not have those markets on its side right now. As again, like I said, when talking about its international number right now, it's only at $185 million. And right now, it's one of the rare instances when you look at the separation between the percentage differential between domestic box office and international box office, usually the international box office is leading the domestic front. This time it's reversed, where domestic is leading the international. So Little Mermaid is still very popular here, but unlike Aladdin and Beauty and Lion King, those films somehow had more popular market shares than this film does. Now, whether it's because of the racial issues in terms of maybe audience members not liking the fact that Halle Bailey is playing this role and it's not what the animated film was in terms of it being a white mermaid and a black mermaid, to me, it shouldn't be that way, but it seems like at least in international markets that maybe could be playing out that way. But then when you look at something like Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, that's doing well in international markets. So could it be that? Could it be just the fact that people internationally don't want to see a Little Mermaid film? I really couldn't tell you. It just might just be that people do not care about this film and they don't want to go see it. And it could also be the fact that I think for a lot of these films right now, it's just in international markets, American films might not just be playing well overall, but sometimes they do. I just don't know what it is. So I think that it's going to be very interesting how you what you call this film, because I do think if it gets to between $500 and $700 million, maybe even $600 million, I think this would be a modest success for Disney. I think you have to call it a modest success because it would still be doing well here in the States, not doing well internationally. And when you look at the worldwide total, is it not what you probably expected it to be when you look at the fact that The Little Mermaid is arguably the biggest film or one of the biggest films within that Disney Renaissance era? And those films, when you look at Aladdin, Lion King, Beauty and the Beast, they came from that same time period as Little Mermaid, and they crushed it, and this film just hasn't so far. It's, you could look at it and say it could be a little bit of a disappointment, and Disney's expectations, because of those earlier successes, made their mark a little higher than maybe it should have been. Maybe they have to lower it a little bit. So I don't know, but I think if it were to hit, I think high expectations right now, great expectations would be if it somehow is able to maybe pick up in international markets in the next couple weeks and maybe hit $700, $800 million. That would actually be a really good win for this film considering where it started out from. The international market has stabilized a little bit from where it was in those first two weekends, but still though, I just think that this film is doing really well over here. It's going to have to be the domestic box office that carries this film in the next couple of weeks, but we'll see what happens. I don't know what happened internationally. I think, including myself, I think a lot of people were just off on the projections. The fact that it came out on Memorial Day weekend, that it would have been bigger than we thought it was, which it still did very, very well in its Memorial Day weekend. When you look at the record books, it's the number five biggest Memorial Day opening of all time, alongside you have Pirates and Top Gun Maverick. So this film still did very, very, very well. And I think overall, by the end of its run, whether it's in July or August, will be a modest run that this film had and will be a success for Disney when all is said and done. So number three again was The Little Mermaid. Coming in at number four, staying at the number four spot, is Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, which came in at $7.2 million at this weekend's box office. Now it now has $335 million domestically, $470 million internationally, for a worldwide total now of $806 million at the box office. And talking about Spider-Man, talking about Little Mermaid and Transformers this past weekend. Right now, again, we still have half of a summer movie season to go, which is so crazy that we're at the, almost basically the halfway mark of the summer movie season. But right now, when you look at all the films and their success throughout their run so far, Guardians of the Galaxy is still the biggest one right now. Again, we'll have to see how some of these other films do and the ones that are set to come out in the next couple of weeks. But I think when you look at the first half of this season, Marvel wins it again, even despite all the shortcomings and bumps in the road that Marvel has had this year and maybe last year. Guardians of the Galaxy, like I think a lot of us predicted, stabilized the MCU for now. We're having a Disney Plus show for Marvel come out next week with Secret Invasion, so we'll see how that does. But in terms of the feature film slate, Guardians, I think, did what it needed to do, where it showcased pre-existing characters that everyone fell in love with throughout the Infinity Saga, showcased a movie that wrapped up their story. People liked the way that that story wrapped up, and they're going for multiple repeat viewings, whether it's comic book fans, Guardians fans, general audience members, just in general. I think this film is the big winner of the summer season so far. The fact that it's almost hitting $800-900 million is very well for the overall market for the MCU. Again, I think the big challenge for at least the feature film side is going to be what happens with the Marvels in November. But I think for right now, like myself and others thought, this would be a good stabilizer in the moment for Marvel, for Disney with this content. And I think right now, when we look at the early winners, Marvel still is one of the big rulers of the summer season, and Guardians is just continuing to prove that fact right now throughout its run. So a really good start and a really good run for this James Gunn film right now. Then coming in at number five is The Boogeyman, which grossed an additional $7.1 million at the box office and now has $24.9 million domestically, $14 million internationally, for a worldwide total of $39 million at the box office. Then rounding out the rest of the top 10, going from 6 all the way to 10, number 6 is Fast 10, grossing $5.2 million at the box office and now has $138 million domestically, $515 million internationally, for a worldwide total of $653 million. Then coming in at number 7 is the biggest film of 2023 so far, which is, of course, the Super Mario Brothers, which is in its 10th weekend right now, is still crushing it overall. It has now grossed $2.2 million this weekend. It now has $570 million domestically, $745 million internationally, for a worldwide total of $1.3 billion at the box office, and still right now remains the only billion-dollar hit of 2023 so far. And coming in the final three spots of the box office this weekend, number 8 is About My Father, which grossed an additional $837,000 at the box office and now has $10.7 million domestically, $1 million internationally, for a worldwide total of $12 million. Then coming in at number 9 was The Machine with $576.5 million this weekend. And then rounding out the top 10 was the film Past Lives, the new film from A24, which of course is coming off of its Academy Award winning run with Everything Everywhere All at Once. That film grossed $520 million domestically and now has $876,000 domestically. It has not come out in international markets, so its domestic total is also its worldwide total as well. And the very interesting thing actually about this film, to round out the box office recap, is that the theater count for Past Lives grew from its initial run last weekend, which is around 4 theaters, to it expanded to 22 new theaters, which rounds out to 26 theaters overall. It had a 124% jump in its intake in the box office. And when you take into account all the films that came out this weekend, Transformers, Spider-Man, Guardians, Little Mermaid, Past Lives had the best per theater average of all the films that came out this weekend or were on the weekend box office charts and performing in theaters, as Past Lives had a per theater average of $20,000. No film this weekend had any better. The highest one besides that one was Transformers Rise of the Beast at $16,000 per theater. So again, a huge, huge number for Past Lives. And I think one of the things that's missing from the summer season so far is these kind of indie art house films doing well. And I think one of the great things about the summer movie season is that you have the blockbusters, but it's also about the mid-level budget to smaller budget art house films that also hopefully can break out and perform really well at the summer movie season. I think post-COVID, that's one of the things I think we're going to be looking to see how those kinds of films do moving forward. I think next weekend with the Jennifer Lawrence new comedy No Hard Feelings coming out, that's going to be a big test for kind of the comedy mid-level budget films coming out in Hollywood right now that aren't these multi-million dollar blockbusters. So it'll be very interesting to see, but I think for Past Lives, it's a very good start to their run. Hopefully they can continue this moving forward and we can kind of get these films back on some kind of good track and get them to be viable profits for these theaters and for these studios so they can have the confidence to keep putting these films in theaters. But that's the top 10 recap of the box office this weekend. Again, going from 10 to number 1. Number 10 was Past Lives. Number 9 was The Machine. Number 8 was About My Father. Number 7 was the Super Mario Brothers movie. Coming in at number 5 was Fast 10. Then coming in at the number 4 spot coming in at number 6 was Fast 10. Coming in at number 5 was The Boogeyman. I apologize for that. Coming in at number 4 was Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. Coming in at number 3 was The Little Mermaid. Coming in at number 2 was Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. And coming in as the new number 1 champion this past weekend was the 7th main overall installment in the Transformers franchise, Transformers Rise of the Beast. So what do you guys think about this weekend's top 10? Let me know what you thought overall and leave your thoughts. Now to move on to the other two main news topics that I want to get into before wrapping up the podcast today. The first one is, of course, talking about the big trending trailer coming out today, which is for the next Disney Pixar film to come out in theaters next year, just as we're about to have the 27th feature film from Pixar with Elemental hitting theaters this upcoming weekend. Pixar, Disney are already getting the machine moving for their next film, which again, I said at the top of the show, will be their 28th animated feature within their amazing, lucrative, classic, legendary category of amazing animated films to come out. It is going to be called Elio, which has a really, really good cast that includes Jamia Jamil, Brad Garrett, America Forever, and introducing a young actor in Jonas Cabrera. And it is set to be directed by Adrian Malonia, who was one of the screenwriters, or the screenwriter and one of the co-directors for the hit Pixar film Coco, which came back out in 2017. And the basic synopsis for this film is that for centuries, people have called out to the universe looking for answers. And Disney Pixar's all-new movie, Elio, the universe calls back. The original feature film introduces Elio, an underdog with an active imagination who finds himself inadvertently beamed up to the common universe, an interplanetary organization with representatives from a galaxy far and wide, mistakenly identified as Earth's ambassador to the rest of the universe, and completely unprepared for that kind of pressure. Elio must form new bonds and eccentric alien life forms, survive a series of formidable trials, and somehow discover who he is truly meant to be. So that is the overall synopsis and story form for the new Disney Pixar film, Elio. And again, for me, even though I think Pixar, there's a lot of questions surrounding Pixar in terms of their profit and what they're able to do in terms of bringing back the box office powerhouse that is this company. Lightyear wasn't able to do it last year. Elemental's coming out this weekend, so it's going to be a big test to see how this company is able to do when you have other ones like Sony Pictures Animation with Across the Spider-Verse, and earlier this year, of course, with the Super Mario Brothers with Illumination Entertainment, and that film being the biggest film of 2023 so far, grossing $1.3 billion. So it's going to be a big testament that what Pixar is going to be able to do. But I think the one thing that you can't question Pixar about is the way that they're able to still innovate and re-innovate animation and also make fully four quadrant films, not just for kids, but adults as well. And sure, I think other companies like Sony have been able to match up to the level of Pixar nowadays, but it's taken these companies a little while to get there. And still, to me, one of the big forefathers of animation is Pixar. So whenever a new Pixar film comes out, I'm going to be excited. And I remember hearing about this film back last year at A24, and I remember seeing pictures for some of the concept art. But the great thing always when it comes to animation is even though concept art is great, it's seeing the animation fully realized and looking at what they're able to do with this film and the bright colors and luminantry aspects of space and these aliens looks very intriguing. And there was only a teaser trailer, so they didn't really give too much away, but right away I was able to kind of see what the heart of the film was going to be, which it seems like Elio's mother, who is seems like it's voiced by America Ferrera, is someone who is protective of her son but is focused on her work, doesn't really have a lot of time to care for her son. The son's really kind of out there, Elio's just doing his thing, and he's got to be able to find who he wants to be, and he meets all these new people. So just right there, usually in a Pixar trailer, it just kind of introduces you to all the characters in the world. I was actually able to get a lot from this teaser trailer, more so than any other Pixar movie so far. And I really like what I saw. I really like what it seems like the messages of this film is going to be. I think still, no matter what, again, Pixar is still the king when it comes to storytelling and making messages, not for children, but adults as well. And I'm excited to hopefully still see that in Elemental when I see it this weekend. And I'm just looking at this trailer, it seems like I'll be getting that as well with this new Pixar film in Elio. And this one is set to come out on March 1st of 2024, which is said to be another, or really the next year, which is going to have two Pixar films coming out in the year, as only so far this year in 2023, Elemental is the only Pixar film to come out. So next year it'll be Elio, and then of course the big summer film is going to be Inside Out 2. But for right now with Elio, I'm very excited about this film. I think it's a smart idea to come out in around the March year or March quarter, especially when you have a film like Inside Out 2, which is going to kind of set the market and the summer season for Pixar next year. So I'm excited to see this one. I have a feeling that it could turn into what Turning Red potentially could have been, maybe in terms of the financial capability of a film like that and like this coming out in the springtime. So we'll see what happens, but I really like the first trailer. I'm excited to see this trailer play in theaters when I go see Elemental this weekend, and we'll see where it all goes. But really strong start to this campaign, and I'm excited to see what else we get as the months move forward before we get this film next spring. So what did you guys think about the first trailer for Elio? Let me know what you think down below and leave your thoughts. And finally, the last thing that I want to talk about on the podcast today is the biggest thing, and I left it for last because we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about it. And that, of course, was the big news that came out earlier today when Disney basically threw another big bomb in the Hollywood film slate calendar and really kind of shook up the next, I don't know, in almost decade or so, up to 2031, which is, even just saying 2031 is kind of crazy and surreal, but that's what Hollywood does nowadays, is they plan, and Disney is notorious for this, they plan for years and years and years and years from now so they can lock up these spots no matter what, and all these studios are going to have to play around all these films and not be the ones that other studios have to play against. So Disney is moving the ball on that, but they're moving everything around for the most part. And a lot of the big highlights that come from this release change are not just some of the smaller films that come out, but it's from their bigger, or not bigger, but biggest franchises right now that they have. And they're some of the biggest franchises in Hollywood. We're talking about the Marvel Cinematic Universe. We're talking about Lucasfilm, specifically Star Wars. And we're also talking about the Avatar film. So there's a lot to get into when we talk about this release slate. So I'm just kind of going to go through each and every single one, and then at the end I'll talk about and kind of categorize them in different aspects, Avatar, Star Wars, Marvel, the rest, and kind of go into the reasons for why I think these release shifts happened. So we're going to go into each and every single one of them right now. And again, it's a lot of them. So buckle in as we get going for which films were changed and which ones were added and which ones are kind of staying the same. So we're going to start out with one of the first big ones, which was kind of ready to set and kick off the summer movie season next year, which was going to be Captain America and its new title, Brave New World. Well, that one is going to be now in the middle of next year's summer movie season. It is moving from May 3rd of next year to July 26th of next year in 2024. And then the film that was supposed to be on that date is going to be going and jumping over to December 20th of next year, which is Thunderbolts. So instead of coming out on July 26th of next year, it is now going to be moving to December 20th. Then what is now going to be slated as in the Alien movie is now set to be coming out on August 16th of next year. And then moving to the next MCU film on this list is Blade, which was set to come out in September of next year, is now set to come out a couple months later in 2025, when it'll be opening up around the Valentine's Day weekend on February 14th of 2025. Then the film that was set to actually come out in November of next year is actually the one that got moved up the most, which was the now what is now being called as the untitled Deadpool film, aka Deadpool 3, with Hugh Jackman, Ryan Reynolds returning as the Merc with the Mouth. That is going to be moving up to what was Captain America Brave New World's original spot from November 8th of 2024 all the way up to kick off the summer movie season. And then the film that was set to originally take that December 20th, 2024 spot, which is now occupied by Thunderbolts, it was Avatar 3, which is, I think, to no one's surprise, really, or to some it might be, it's moving from the December 2024 slate to now a day later, but a year later, in December 19th of 2025. Then what was supposed to be the Valentine's Day release in 2025, which is now what Blade occupies, is now going to that film that was on that date was Fantastic Four. And Fantastic Four is now going to be moving a few months later and is going to kick off the summer movie season of 2025 when it hits theaters on May 2nd. And for some of you, you might be saying, well, Sam, Avengers Kang Dynasty was supposed to be setting up and get that spot for May 2nd of 2025. Well, person who says that to me, you're right. It was supposed to be Avengers the Kang Dynasty. And instead, Avengers Kang Dynasty will be coming out a day later, but a year later. Instead of coming out on May 2nd, 2025, it'll now be coming out on May 1st, 2026. And because of that tidal effect and that tidal wave that is going to be happening because it'll be moving a year later, because of that, what was supposed to be on May 1st of 2026 is going to be now a year later on May 7th, 2027, when Avengers Secret Wars is set to come out. And we're not done. There's still a few more to get into. So Moana is, which was announced a few months ago, was announced that Dwayne Johnson is going to be reprising the role of Maui. They're going to be finding a new young actress to be playing Moana. That was originally an untitled Disney film, and that is now being placed for Moana, which originally had a release date of July 2nd, 2025. It'll be moving up by a couple of days instead of coming out on June 27th of 2025. And within that same year, basically that same year, we're going to be having two live-action retellings of animated classics in the last decade plus between How to Train Your Dragon, which is doing a live-action retelling of that movie, and of course a new animated classic from the Disney Vault in Moana. And then there is some news front on the Star Wars world, as it was announced that the film that was supposed to be coming out on December 19th of 2025, now that Avatar 3 is going to be taking over that date, that untitled Star Wars film is going to be moving a few months up to the summer movie season of 2026. Instead of coming out in the December slot, that film is going to be coming out on May 22nd, 2026. And then there is also a new film from Star Wars that's going to be implemented in 2026 as well, that'll actually be coming out in the kind of summer, not summer, but the Star Wars traditional window that these recent films have had back in the 2015-2019 run when they will come out in December. We have a new Star Wars film set up for December 18th of 2026. There's also another Star Wars film that has not changed its date that was already set years ago for December 2027. So that one is still in its place right now, resumed for that slot the following year. And then speaking of the other two Avatar films, because the other all these movies have been moved around, those films have been moved around as well. So instead of coming out on December 18th, 2026, which is where this new Star Wars film was added, Avatar 4, which was originally set to be kind of alternating between a Star Wars film, an Avatar film over the next couple of years, Avatar 4 is going to be jumping to not just a year later, but 3 years later to December 21st, 2029. So between Avatar 3, which is going to be coming out in 2025, and Avatar 4, that's going to be about a 5 year gap between one film and another one, giving J.J. Abrams, James Cameron, a lot of time to make those films. And then coming out 2 years later, coming in after it was originally set for December 22nd, 2028, the final installment in the Avatar saga, Avatar 5, as it's called right now, will be slated for December 19th, 2031. So in terms of the new release dates and the significant films that are on the slate, those are the ones that were really kind of impacted and really kind of shifted everything around for Disney. And I think it's going to shift a lot of things around for these studios over the next couple of years. So take a moment, collect your breath, breathe out, relax, and now we're going to kind of really dive into what this means. So overall, when you look at all these films that moved, I think there's a plethora of reasons for all of it, really. So to go into the Avatar films first, so to me, it's no surprise that at least Avatar 3 got pushed back to 2025, I think. When you hear James Cameron talk about Avatar 3, John Landau, everyone that's involved in it, even though it sounds like they're well ahead into finishing that film in the next couple of years, even though it was a year gap between 2022 and then 2024, where you don't have a film coming out in 2023, even though the film was coming out December of next year before it got changed, it seemed like it still might have been a tight deadline for it to go. And I think if the Way of Water taught everything is that it doesn't matter if it's 12 years, 15 years between one film and the other, Avatar just has this popularity that really no other franchise right now has between films, where the sustainability is still there. I mean, James Cameron owns three of the five highest grossing films of all time between Titanic and these two Avatar films. They still do business. And so I think they realize that they can take some time with these films and get them to where they really need to get them and not have them rush out at all. And so it didn't surprise me that 3 moved. I think it's a little bit of a surprise to me that there's a big of a gap between 3 and 4 between 2025 and 2029, but also at the same time, it kind of makes sense, as with those films between Avatar 4 and 5, the big storyline when you talk about the making of these films is that for the most part, principal photography between Avatar 2 and 3 were simultaneous. They also shot the opening act of Avatar 4 because it seems like within the story of Avatar 4, there's a big time jump. So Cameron wanted to make sure, especially with these kids, because they grow up so fast in these couple of years and, you know, they go through changes, their bodies change. They either grow up or their voices are different and whatnot. He needed to get these child actors in and get them what he needed to get out of them in that time period. But he still needs to shoot the rest of Avatar 4, all of Avatar 5. And we've seen the way that these films are made, it takes a long time for this technology to evolve. And with these other movies, who knows what Cameron has in store. It seems like within Avatar 3, he's going to be focusing on more of like a fire culture after exploring the water culture within Pandora in the Way of Water. So it takes a long time to work on this. And John Landau even put it in a Twitter post when this news came through a couple of hours ago that it's extensive work and they want to make it as best they possibly can. And the studio, and I think they also know, listen, we waited all these years to perfect these movies, and specifically with the second one, get them out as long as possible, take our time with them, and the people still came out and watched the film. and they saw these movies no matter what. And I think the franchise is just a popular, so it's not like we're waiting so long for these films, which we kind of are, but at least with the third one, it's not a huge gap. I think people are wondering, well, we wouldn't be shocked if the third one moves again. Would I be shocked? No, I wouldn't be, but I do think that 2025 is a more reasonable, understandable release date for that film to hit. When it comes to 4 and 5, would I be shocked if those moved into 2023 or 2033 and beyond? I would not be shocked, but we'll take one film at a time when it comes to at least the Avatar movies, and I just think it's the right idea to space them out, make them more of an event, and give the creators and everyone involved in this project the time that they need to make it as best as they possibly can, because clearly, when it came to working between, even though they work on all these films over the last decade, between 2 through 5, they worked on 2, they crafted the technology, they got it to where it needed to be, they took their time with it, and here we are, and it's one of the highest grossing films of all time. People loved it. Some people thought it was better than the original film between the story and the technology. So let them do what they want to do, and however long it takes, people will still come and watch them. As they say in the Field of Dreams, if you build it, they will come, and most certainly they did that indeed with The Way of Water, and I think with the third one, we will get similar results to The Way of Water in 2025 with Avatar 3. So no surprise when it came to some of those release dates, and I think it makes sense. When it comes to the Marvel Cinematic Universe, I think there's a lot more webs to untangle within the messiness of this, all these release changes, because we really, when you look at it, all the convoluted release changes really are in due part to the MCU, really. And I think there's a bunch of key factors into all this. One, I do think while Avatar 4 and 5 probably won't be affected by the writer's strike, and 3 is well into production by now, those scripts were written a long, long time ago, really, at this point, at least the initial drafts were, probably revisions as well. The MCU, they're still working on all these scripts and trying to develop these as best they can, and they're in production on some shows and movies right now where they're affected by the writer's strike. Whether it's films not going into production like Blade and Thunderbolts, or some of their shows are having to shut down because some of the IATSE and the local Teamsters don't want to cross picket lines if they're being protested upon, they have to shut down production. And so I think for the Marvel Cinematic Universe, it has to do with the fact that the writer's strike is really hampering them, especially on productions, on pre-production. When it comes to writing some of this stuff, they're notorious for always writing and rewriting and doing things up while in production. And so I think for some of these films, they're just pushing their stuff back to make sure that they have the room to film this stuff and get it to where they need to get it to. I think you might have to take the Jonathan Majors stuff into account as well. I think the fact that for some of these Avengers films, I think it was smart for them to move those films to where they did. It does not sound like those films are anywhere close to being ready yet. It sounds like they're very much still in the production, pre-production phase and the writing stage. And again, if you're in the writer's strike right now, those scripts are not being written at the particular moment in time. And so those needed to be pushed back. And some of the other things that I think really were interesting to me when it came to the release date changes for these films is some of the moves that they made. I think the fact that Deadpool 3 got moved not just to the July quarter where Thunderbolts was, and it makes sense that Thunderbolts was pushed to December, although I still think that's more of a summer film. It makes sense why they pushed that all the way, because they still have to shoot the thing. Deadpool 3 is shooting right now. Captain America Brave New World is almost close to done to being shooting. If not, they probably only have a couple weeks left to shoot before they're officially wrapped on principal photography. So it makes sense why Thunderbolts moved to that spot. But to me, it's surprising that Deadpool 3 is getting the confidence from Marvel to shoot to a May corridor and not getting that July corridor instead. I think it shows the confidence that they have in what they're doing in Deadpool 3, that what they have is going to be enough to make it that event summer opening film that Marvel has always done. And again, like I was saying at the top of the show with the Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, that's the kind of movie that stabilized Marvel, and it's showing and reaping rewards in what it has been able to do throughout its run so far since it opened up at the beginning of May. So they feel like Deadpool can do that. They think the goodwill towards the character, towards Ryan Reynolds, the fact that Hugh Jackman is coming back, I think, and whether you believe some of these rumors or not of who could be appearing and who and might be involved in the story and whatnot, I think it shows that they feel confident in that film. And then I think with Captain America Brave New World, I think that could have very well opened up the summer movie season. I think even though it's Anthony Mackie, not Chris Evans, in the role, I still think that when you have the name Captain America, the film, the character has enough goodwill that it deserves to open up a summer movie season. But I think they feel like within that July quarter and that whatever comes out in August of next year, I can't remember off the top of my head what comes out. I don't think anything significant really in terms of big blockbusters. I'm sure they feel confident that a film like Captain America could carry the rest of the summer season and have great legs where it might be able to reap the rewards of not having a big August to and fill in that void for blockbusters, really, if there's nothing really big that can that could potentially compete with it. So I think that is probably the thinking when it came to those two movies. I like the fact that for Fantastic Four, it's moving to the May corridor. I didn't really like that February release date for F4. I definitely think that it deserved to be in the summertime, whether it's July or in May. I think it shows confidence that for Marvel, that whatever happens with that film, whoever gets cast in the lead roles, whatever it is, it's the fact that I think Marvel feels confident that whenever the logo appears and you see Marvel Studios on above it, no matter what you think of the MCU right now, you feel confident that they'll be able to do right by these characters. And I think it's the confidence that they have instilled within that release date that shows that they feel like that could be a good sign for Fantastic Four. When it comes to Blade, it's that film is just on a whirlwind right now. And I mean, it makes sense they pushed it from November to, or rather September, it was supposed to come out at, I believe. Yeah, it was supposed to come out in September of next year. The fact that it hasn't started shooting yet, and the fact that they went through rewrites and directors, and they're not, I don't even know where they are in the production stage whenever the writer's strike ends, it makes sense that they pushed it back to February. Now, I think that's going to be a very interesting date. I know that is also Black History Month, so I think that could play very well. We all know how Black Panther did in February in 2018, so I'm not saying that Blade is going to have the numbers of Black Panther, but I do think that that is a very good release date to have it. I think you have an iconic figure, Mahershala Ali, in that role. I think that could very well drive people to the box office and go see that film, and I think that could do actually very well on that date. I think people might get hooked up on the fact that it's Valentine's Day weekend. Why do you have a Valentine's Day film, or why do you have a film like that on Valentine's Day? It works for them, and February has worked for Marvel. It's that lucrative holiday weekend, so Marvel wants to put it there, and I think that makes sense overall for why you would put that film in there. So for Marvel, I think they are the ones that are really affected by this. When you see all the maneuvering that they did, I think it's smart that when you look at the slate of Marvel over the next couple of years, I think with Bob Iger implemented, you're seeing that strategy come in where it's not more. I think they're really kind of pulling back on the content that we receive, and I think it's for the better. I think we're seeing that even this year between Ant-Man and the Wasp, it was a couple months between that and Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. Now it's about a month and a half between Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 and next weekend's premiere of Secret Invasion. And then between that, we're not going to get anything until later in September, really, in October when we get Loki season 2. And that's, it seems like right now we're getting that on October. Then after Loki comes out in November, we get the Marvels. And then a few weeks later, which is the shortest time between turnaround for Marvel projects, we get the Marvels. And then end of November, we get Echo, all of Echo, basically, to close out November and beginning of December to kind of get the rest of our year-end TV binging in. So I think it's very much a slow rollback for Marvel. And then when you look at the next couple of years. I mean, next year, the fact that who knows on what shows we might get on 2024. But when you look at the films that are coming out, we're not getting anything in February or early part of 2024. The first big Marvel film will be Deadpool 3. Then in July, it'll be Captain America. And then right now, December 20th, it'll be Thunderbolts. So three films in 2024. When you look at 2025 right now, it's only two films that we're going to be getting in 2025 between Blade in February, and then in May it's going to be Fantastic Four. And then 2026 right now we have 1, 2, 3, 4 Marvel films right now. One in February, one in May, which is going to be Kang Dynasty, one in July, and then one in November. Now whether that changes or not, I have no idea. We're still 3 years basically away from 2026 even happening, so who knows how that will shuffle around. But right now we have four films coming out, and then we have in 2027 Secret Wars in May. So besides that 2026 slot, everything else is evenly kind of paced itself out. And I think that's what's going to work for Marvel moving forward. And I think they're trying to get back to the strategy and the winning formula of what worked for them overall during the Infinity Saga. And I think spacing everything out is going to be key for them moving forward. So we'll see how it all does. But I like the strategy that they're going with, and I think it's going to work out for them in the end. I think the films that they place in certain areas are actually, besides Thunderbolts, which I don't know if that'll get moved or not, it could stay there for all I know, but everything else I feel like is right where it should be, really. And I think it fits well for the best success that each one is placed in it of itself, really. I think the bigger films are in the key prime spots that they need to be in. I think some of the kind of the more smaller films are in the areas that they can be in as well to perform in the best possible ways as well. So that has to do it on the Marvel front. And then the last one is to go into a galaxy far, far away. And really the biggest surprise is the fact that after, even though it's been up until when we get a film in 2026, it will have been almost 6-7 years since we got a Star Wars film in December of 2019. And I know at the end of Bob Iger's first tenure, really, as CEO, he said we're going to be dialing it down on Star Wars films. And I mean, there's basically been no Star Wars films in the last couple of years, so it's been pretty dormant on that front. But then all of a sudden, right away, we're going to be getting not one, but two Star Wars films in 2026. Again, one in May, which before Solo and really Disney acquired Lucasfilm, May was always the release date for a Star Wars film. So they're going back to that front, and then they're hitting us with a new film in December of 2026, and then of course that December 2027 spot. So the big question is are any of these release dates, are these for a film that haven't been announced yet, or are these the three dates, are these for the three films that were announced back at Star Wars Celebration earlier in the year when it was announced that the Sharnae Shikoi Abuduwe film, which is going to be played by Daisy Ridley, which is going to be kind of this Jedi temple, Jedi film, is that going to be the May film? Is that going to be the December movie, or is it going to be something else? Because that December film from 2025 is that May 2026 film now. So is that the Rey film? And then what's these December films? Is the Dave Filoni film the 2026 film? And then is the 2027 film the James Mangold Dawn of the Jedi film? Or is it something else that hasn't been announced yet? And so I think that is very curious. And the fact that Disney and Lucasfilm have this strategy of coming out right out the gate with two films coming out in 2026 in May and December, I think is very interesting. After saying, we're going to take it easy with Star Wars films. And again, they haven't had a Star Wars film, and it's going to be a long time since we get one, when we get one in 2026. But still, I mean, to come out right out of the gate, I think you would want to get people excited again about that fact. But again, maybe one of these films move out of there. Maybe the 2027 film becomes 2028, and then they decide to say, you know what, instead of doing a few years apart, we're going to do what we did with the sequel trilogy and the spinoffs, where we're going to come out with a film every single year, 1, 2, 3. We'll see what happens. But to me, that it's more of a curiosity than anything else when it comes to the Star Wars factor. To me, it's the Avatar scenario of it. It's very kind of plain and simple to me. It's the fact that I think it's strategy and giving Cameron and his crew and cast time to do what they need to do with these films because of how successful they are and they don't need to rush them. I think with the MCU, it's this web of entanglement of all these different things moving about. I think with Star Wars, it's more of a curiosity factor to see where this is all going to go and how this is really all going to shape out. But again, I think a lot of this kind of massive overhaul really hasn't been there since the pandemic happened. I think the reason for this isn't because of the pandemic, but it's because of what's going on right now with the writer's strike. And I think that's a big part of, for the most part, why this is happening. And it's going to be very interesting to see how studios play this out, because productions are being shut down right now, whether it's for a long period of time or just for a couple days. Productions aren't starting yet because they're still in the script stage, both in TV and film. So the next couple years, I mean, we're in a very kind of like big push because of, I think, all the post-production stuff and things that happened with the pandemic. 2023 is just this kind of massive overhaul. And I'm very curious to see what 2024, 2025, and 2026 are going to be like when you have all these films starting to kind of come out, or the derailment of them, how that's going to be affected when we see these films come out over the next couple of years. But for Disney, they laid out their cards up until 2031, which, again, even saying now, like I said before, it's weird saying that. And it's still weird. And I don't even want to think about 2031 until we get to 2031. But Disney likes to plan ahead, and all these studios like to plan ahead. That's the name of the game when it comes to this kind of release date film slate chess that is always being played with this kind of stuff. You want to get ahead of the competition, and Disney is usually ahead of it right now. And so now other studios are going to have to plant their way around these films as of right now, unless, again, Disney decides to pull another fast one and move some of these other release date around in the near future as well. But overall, what do you guys think about these release date changes from Disney? Let me know what you think down below and leave your thoughts. But with that down and out of the way, that will do it for this edition of the Sam Bassell Podcast. Once again, everyone, thank you so much for tuning in. Be sure to check out my channel for more content. You can check me out on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Radio Public, SoundCloud, and much more. Also, make sure to tune in onto the Ambiguous Podcast Solutions. And be sure to check out the other amazing shows on the podcast, such as You Mad Bro, the number one source of what the internet is pissed off about on a weekly basis. Also, check out Goal Driven Professionals, geared toward improving client relations, return on investment, and customer acquisition costs for independent businesses and services. Also, make sure to check out The Daily Grind, a weekly motivational podcast with Kelly Johnson, giving you everyday tips and key takeaways on reaching your goals. Also, along the way, make sure to check out these other amazing shows on the podcast solutions, such as Wrestle Attic Radio, WrestleMania Podcast, and Midnight Showing. You can check these out and so much more on the website, ambiguouspodcastsolutions.com, also on Facebook and Twitter at RealAmbiguous. And if you want to check out Canopy Treehouse, use the coupon code AMBIGUOUS. Also, when you get a chance, make sure to follow me on social media. You can find me on Twitter at Bassell Samuel, that's BUSSELLSAMUEL, and also on Facebook at SamSL. Once again, everyone, thank you so much for tuning in, and until next time, keep on screening.